Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
I'm your host for this issue at Green Sense, and we have a fantastic show for you.
Yes, we have. And food waste, as you know, is a huge problem in the U.S. and worldwide. But we'll take a deeper look at just how bad the problem is, how serious it is for individuals economically, but most importantly, what we can all do about it. Insects, you know, we've talked before about having insects as a daily part of our diets for people, that is. But there is a bit of a challenge there, getting people to actually want to eat bugs. Well, what if you got the animals that we eat to eat the bugs? We'll meet up with someone who's doing just that.
Insects are becoming a more sustainable way to feed our population, so it's going to be very interesting to hear their unique twist on using the bugs to feed animals. All coming up on today's show. We've done segments before about how insects could be a sustainable, protein-rich food source for humans. The biggest challenge is getting people to eat bugs. But what about getting the animals we eat to eat the insects for us? Well, that's what they do at Antera, located in British Columbia, Canada. And we're joined by Victoria Leong, who's in charge of marketing and operations. Welcome, Victoria.
Thanks for having me.
Well, explain how Antera uses insect larvae to produce feed for fish and chickens.
Yeah, well, we're a sustainable insect farm in Langley, BC. We use insects and we feed them to animals like chickens, fish, and pets. We sell them directly to feed manufacturers, so they'll blend our ingredients in with other ingredients and make a formulation specific for the species. And we use food waste to feed our insects. So we're upcycling nutrients from the waste stream, converting them into new nutrients, and using them to feed animals like chickens and fish and pets.
Well, that's pretty clever. If the fish and chickens didn't eat your insects, what would they be eating?
So fish, particularly in aquaculture, they're fed a diet that consists of fish meal, largely, and other ingredients as well. Fish meal is a major component of farmed fish diets. And fish meal comes from ground up salty fish like herring and anchovies that we catch in the wild. So we're actually catching wild fish to feed our farmed fish, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us. So that's why we're growing insects. Insects are a natural feed for fish as well, and for chickens too. So when we think about what free-range chickens are eating, they're foraging around the grass for insects. What we feed to them in poultry barns, a lot of it is soy-based, other grains as well. So we want to provide something that's more natural to what the animals want to eat.
Well, I hear you also use the insects to make pet food. So explain how those fit into the pet food process.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of hypoallergenic pets out there. So folks that are listening might know someone or have a pet of their own that has food allergies. So the typical ingredients that are used in pet food, like chicken and beef, might not fit their specific pet's diet. So they're looking for novel proteins. So we'd see on the market, you know, pet foods that include kangaroo meat and venison and bison. And we feel insects are right there with those other novel proteins, giving those specific pets an alternative protein that they hopefully can digest.
Well, you raise these insects. What kind of resources does that require? And how does that compare to raising other sources of protein like chicken or fish when it comes to sustainability?
Yeah, it's a pretty efficient process. Our farm facility has a few major components to it. So because we're using food waste to feed our bugs, we have a whole food waste receiving area where we receive truckloads, mostly of produce that's close to being spoiled. And it comes from the supply chain, and we mix that all together to feed the insects. We have a whole insect rearing area as well, and that's where all the magic happens. We're rearing our insects in an automated crane system, and it's very similar to indoor lettuce growing as well. So we have them in containers, they're stacked, they're moved by cranes. And then afterwards, when the insects are ready to be harvested, we have a whole feed manufacturing process as well to ensure the safety and quality of our finished product. So it's pretty efficient. We don't use any added water in our process. A lot of the, or all of the water that the insects require actually come from the food waste that we get. So produce is typically high in water content. So it provides all the water that the insects need to survive.
What do your friends say when you tell them you work at an insect farm?
You know, I never thought that I would grow up to be a bug farmer, but here I am, and it's the greatest thing ever.
My guest is Victoria Leong with Antera Feed Corporation, and we're talking about insects as a source of protein for fish and chickens. Victoria, in the raising of crops and livestock, we have different quality standards. Is there any quality standards for insects to know that you're getting a highest quality or possibly a low quality raised insect?
Yeah, for sure. What you feed them matters a lot, and then how you treat them. So we put our insects through a dryer. They get heat treated, they get sanitized. We follow proper feed safety protocols, just like any other livestock facility. To ensure that our insects are safe for animal consumption.
Is there an organic standard for raising insects?
There isn't really yet. So our product isn't considered organic today because we don't feed them just certified organic food waste. That would be extremely difficult to be able to source that
sure.
much organic food waste. But we don't add anything to our insects and we don't do anything to them. So, you know, we kind of consider them organic. We think that they should be considered organic. So that's something that we're working with organics boards on.
Yeah, I would think so. We've done a number of programs on people raising insects to produce food for humans. Why didn't you decide to go that route?
I think that that's maybe a longer-term goal for us. We would love to be able to feed people directly with our insects. We think they'd be a really great source of protein and fat for humans as well. The market isn't really fully developed yet, though. I mean, we're starting to see the trends kind of emerge. You're seeing a lot of cricket protein available for human consumption, but the market is still really small today, and we want to make a big splash here and really get commercial-scale production going. So we want to start off with animal feed, where I think it's more palatable for Western cultures at least, and then we'll see where this human food trend goes. I think we'll see it sooner than we think.
I concur with you. I think you've picked a really nice niche to pursue. Tell us where you are in terms of your process. Are you in a pilot phase or are you at commercial production?
We're at a commercial scale pilot plant right now. We are currently working on our next facility. It's going to be open early next year. That's going to be a lot higher commercial production. And that is going to be opening just outside of Calgary, Alberta.
Well, what is a misconception that people have about insects that you'd like to share with us to clear that up?
I think that there might be a misconception that they're dirty or filthy, and I don't think that's the case at all. The insect we use is a beneficial insect. It's Mother Nature's nutrient renewal expert, and it's what it does in the wild. It's able to convert waste nutrients, you know, nutrients that we consider waste, and then upcycle them into valuable protein, fat, and energy to provide food for animals. So I think that's the main misconception there.
What type of insect do you use?
It's called the black soldier fly. So like I said, it's a beneficial insect species. It means it doesn't sting, it doesn't bite, it doesn't carry disease. It's a really interesting species. As an adult fly, it doesn't have chewing mouth parts. So it's not actually eating in this stage at all. It's really just mating and reproducing. The females will lay eggs that hatch into larvae. And when they first hatch, the larvae are microscopic. You can hardly see them with your naked eye. And it's in this larval stage that they need to eat food. So we feed them in the larval stage, and then about 3 weeks later, they grow 1,000,000% their size, and they're ready for harvesting for our purposes. In nature, of course, they would emerge as adult flies after that.
Well, Victoria, thank you for sharing all this information with us, and we wish you the best of luck with your project.
Thanks so much, Robert. Appreciate your time.
That's Victoria Leong of Antera with us on GreenSense, talking about insects being used for animal feed and fertilizer. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is GreenSense. Subscribe to our podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. It takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you.
A new report on food waste continues to show the shocking reality of the problem. Americans waste 915 pounds of food per person every year. Canadians are slightly behind at 873 pounds, and Mexicans at 549 pounds per capita. The report also finds that the largest share of food loss and waste in North America occurs at the consumer level. To help us understand some solutions to this problem, we're joined by David Donaldson with the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, which came out with the report. David, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Food waste is more than the food thrown out of your refrigerator that goes stale. It happens all along the entire food chain, from the farm to the table. And it isn't only the food itself that's wasted. It also includes increases in greenhouse gas emissions, increases in landfill space, and all the wasted seeds, fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, and water. Explain the connection to food waste and all those other things I've mentioned.
Yeah, okay. So it'll be, it's my pleasure. So for starters, this is not just, as you said, the science experiment, as we like to call it, in the back of your refrigerator. This involves, starts at the farm and works its way all the way through that supply chain. And so really, when you're looking at food waste, you're not just looking at that end product. You're looking at all the water that went into it. So for example, in North America, we actually waste 7 million Olympic swimming pools full of water.
Amazing.
You're looking... Yeah, no, it really is. You have 41 million cars driving continuously on our roads as the equivalent of the greenhouse gases that are embedded in that life cycle of that food. So all the energy that went from producing it to transporting it and processing it and bringing it to your house or to your restaurant. And then we spend, in total, we then fill our landfills with it. So it's the second, or I'm sorry, it fills about half of our landfills actually are filled with food waste. And it is giving, as I said, it's the number three source of methane emissions, which is a highly potent greenhouse gas in the U.S. Emitted from landfills. So it really is a significant issue. I'll just mention quickly that the market value of food that we waste in the U.S. is about $218 billion. That comes to about $600 a person.
Well, that's pretty amazing, David. And something that people really respond to is the almighty dollar. And as you've just mentioned, $218 billion in market value is lost every year because of food waste. How can you translate that into the everyday person's vernacular so that they understand that a little better?
Yeah, so, and it's not just happening with, you and me in our households, but it's really all the way, this is kind of for every woman, man, and child, for every person in the United States, that's a $600 a year loss in money that was spent on food. So grocery stores throwing away food that wasn't sold, or restaurants throwing away food that wasn't sold or eaten, and then also in that production chain, quite a lot of savings potential for a family of four, let's say. And then I'll add, too, that we spend about $1.3 billion actually on the landfilling of that garbage. So we're not only spending all that money to buy it, not eat it, but then we're spending, a lot of money on throwing it into a landfill. So that's kind of the cost, really.
Well, your report shows that Americans waste more food than Canadians, who waste more than Mexicans. In your opinion, why is there such a great difference among the cultures?
So globally, we are estimated by the United Nations wasting a third of our food. So the entire world wastes about a third of our food. And what we see from that global data is that the higher income countries tend to waste more. And we tend to especially waste more as consumers. We're pretty close, the U.S. and Canada, in terms of per capita food waste. We're right in there. A lot of it's happening at the consumer level. There's some at the pre-farm, and there's a good bit in industry and the commercial sectors. But in the case of Mexico, what we find is a lot of that waste is actually happening kind of pre-consumer, where you have less efficient food production or transport systems that are in place that lead to that waste there, like refrigeration, for example. There's a need for greater refrigeration and transport, and some of the existing technologies are really more focused on the export markets. So refrigerated transport in Mexico would be used to get products to the U.S. so that it can meet our high standards in our grocery stores, but not deployed as much domestically in Mexico.
My guest is David Donaldson with the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, which came out with a report on food waste, and we're talking about some of the solutions. So, David, let's get right to it. Give us some further detail in your report's findings on how it will help us reduce food waste. And we have three different areas here: reduced portion sizes in food service, storage and transportation improvements, and standardizing date labels. Let's start with the first one. How is reducing portion sizes in food service going to help?
There's two aspects of food service. There's the pre-consumer, so what's happening back in the kitchen. Decisions are being made, especially with chain restaurants, where you know you have really high standards, you have really strict requirements for how long food can be available before it's sold. And then once you start to move food into the kitchen where you're serving your customers, you end up with 20% of the food that's actually served in food service isn't actually eaten. So 20% of what's put on the plate is left and thrown away. And I don't know about you, but skipping 20% of the food for a lot of folks, myself included, would not be a bad idea. But there's also issues with how food is served in terms of if you're looking at a buffet, for example. You know, people really have this idea appeal to the abundance of food. Restaurants kind of recognize that, but there are strategies that can be used in terms of having shallower serving trays or having items that can be brought onto that buffet that aren't more easily prepared versus ones that you have to prepare for in advance and may not be consumed.
Let's move on to that next one, storage and transportation improvements. Give me a key tip there that could help reduce food waste.
A lot of the storage and transportation issues really happen, again, in the sector in Mexico, where we have the food cold chain problems, where we have the inability to keep food at the right temperature. We also have that issue that kind of comes into places like grocery stores where you really, again, want to provide this appearance of abundance of food, and you end up causing damage to a lot of that food in that process. I think we might want to talk about food rescue or sending food off to food banks, but another issue where food storage and transport has really become an issue is when we're trying to rescue food and get it to people in need. A lot of the organizations that do that kind of work don't have the capacity to keep food at the appropriate temperatures to preserve it.
Let's also talk about an issue we've covered a number of times, and that's standardizing date labels. Give us the one key thing that you think could help reduce food waste when it comes to standardizing date labels.
Well, so in the U.S., there are 10 different date labels currently in use.
Can you think of that 10? You think that causes some confusion?
Exactly. I know I have problems understanding date labels, and I know most people do. There's no mandatory standard for labels, and there's varying laws in different states. So some states, for example, require date labels. Some don't. Some states say you can't sell food if it's beyond the date label, and some don't have any requirements at all. So these differences really, for starters, pose a huge challenge to even do this kind of education because, you can't approach this at a national scale because what you're dealing with is going to be very different in different locations. It's really, it's a potential for federal harmonization, and there's actually some work that's being done. So there's a voluntary standard that was developed through a working group on date labels that includes the Grocery Manufacturers Association and the Food Marketing Institute. And those are the kinds of efforts that are going to make the biggest difference. And we really think that that's a very positive step forward.
Well, in closing, let's hit something we can all do, and that is food waste at the consumer level. How can we as consumers reduce food waste in our everyday life?
Yeah, so, when we're looking at our day-to-day choices, we really need to continue to keep this awareness in our, in the forefront. And when you're planning your meals, when you're going to do your shopping, you need to first sort of start in your own refrigerator, in your own pantry. You need to think about what you're buying, make that, think about it as part of whether this bulk product that involves, you know, it's a great deal, but if I'm not going to eat or consume, you know, half of it and throw the other half away, is it still a good price? And then really, you know, think about your freezer. The freezer is probably your number one tool as a consumer to preserve food and avoid food waste, is take those leftovers and put them in the freezer, label them, eat them later.
David, that's an excellent tip and a great closing point. Thanks for joining us on Green Sense.
Thanks very much.
That's David Donaldson with the Commission for Environmental Cooperation talking with us on Green Sense about food waste solutions. This is Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Looking for market-based solutions to make the world more sustainable. Solutions driven by economics and innovation, not forced by legislation. Bob, what awe-inspiring guest did you find for next week's show?
Robert, I know you like this one. Water, obviously a serious issue around the world, but it's one thing to just talk about it, but you can inspire people through art. We have something called the Museum of Water. This is really fascinating. Someone has collected people's samples of water from all over the world.
I'm always impressed on how artists can take their creativity to inspire action. So visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. Stay fresh. Keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.